It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the smell of a warm 3-day-old egg salad sandwich in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag with new Fabuloso lemon scent.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Smell the difference? When life gives you stinky, get Hefty Ultra Strong with new Fabuloso lemon scent. It smells like clean, freshly picked lemons. So no matter what's inside your trash, you can stop the stink and smell the lemon.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. It is Wednesday the 31st. You guys will be getting this on Thursday, February 1st, and we haven't seen the sun since
September. I don't know when.
September? God, it has been a long time. It is depressing as hell outside. It didn't rain or snow today, but I'm tired of the color gray. Anyway, alongside me, my good friend Greg Niemann, I'm Joe Farsing. Greg, how are you, sir?
I'm good. We're happy right now. When it's, if it reaches 30, then it's like, okay, this is a good day, you know? So it's been rough.
Yeah. I mean, the temperature by and large hasn't been terrible the last couple, the last week and a half, but it's just, it rained or it snowed or it was sleeting yesterday, some kind of weird, nasty ass mix. And now it's just back to just depressing grayness. That's just, I just want one afternoon of sun. I don't. It could be 10 degrees. I don't care. Just let me see the damn sun. I need the vitamins and soak it up and all that stuff. Otherwise, we're all just going to be sick and die from this nasty stuff.
Yeah. Anyway. As soon as the Bengals were knocked out, it seems like the weather was like here in Cincinnati said, this is what you guys get.
Yeah, it's going to be long, depressing, and take forever. On the plus side, Groundhog's Day is on Friday, and we will watch Groundhog Day on over the weekend, which, you ever watched that movie?
Oh, yes.
I would hope so.
Yes.
It's probably one of my 10 favorite movies of all time. I mean, Bill Murray's
good movie.
Yeah, Bill Murray's hilarious as always, but just being it, like, I'd watch it, you know, every month, but I get yelled at for watching it at a time. It's like watching A Christmas Story before Christmas. You're not allowed to do that, so.
When I was younger, I would always think about it as a kid, like, what would you do if that actually happens? Like, man, that'd be brutal. Day to day, over and over.
My wife and son had like the greatest idea for Groundhog Day 2, the sequel. You go sit and, you know, and go through the opening credit or the trailers and everything. You get the opening credits, and it just starts the first movie all over again.
That would be. That's pretty solid, really. That's a pretty good idea.
Brilliant marketing campaign. I think they need to get somebody on that. So
yeah, hundreds of millions, and you don't have to do a thing. I mean. I like it.
All you got to do is spend money on an advertising campaign. And you're good to go.
Yeah, 100%.
Hey, if you guys are watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. We like it when people subscribe. We like when people leave comments because we like the interaction. We don't do this show for us. I mean, we would, but I wouldn't be looking at, you know, having my ugly mug up here, you know, if we weren't going to be on YouTube, you know, just for the two of us. So. Also, if you guys are listening on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on all the podcast things, leave us a nice review, 5 stars only, or not, whatever. I don't care. Just, I think we do a good job. Let us know we do a good job. If we do a bad job, just keep your comments to yourself. We're nice people here. Hey, championship games were last weekend, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
One was boring as hell, and one was a tale of two halves. We'll hit the Chiefs-Baltimore game first because that was the early game on Sunday. Chiefs 17, Baltimore 10. the Chiefs aren't even, like, this is their fifth best team in the past 5 years, and they're going back to the fourth Super Bowl in 5 years. That looked like, the Ravens looked like a Marvin Lewis coach team, did they not?
Oh, it was wild watching it, because you just kept thinking, okay, when are they gonna, like, just play the Ravens football? And it never happened. It was kind of insane that they allowed the Chiefs to win the game in the first quarter and a half, and then just coast to the finish line. The moment looked too big for Baltimore, for multiple guys. And this is what I've always said about Lamar Jackson. It's a lot easier said than done, but if you make him throw the ball from the pocket and you don't let him run around, and you can kind of contain him in the pocket and make him make throws down the field where guys aren't just completely wide open, he really struggles. And part of that, I think, was on Baltimore's offensive coordinator. They only had 6 handoffs to running backs for the entire game, which is mayhem for the offense that they run. I just thought the whole thing was, it was weird. It was like an out of body experience watching Baltimore play like that against the Kansas City team that they have an elite defense, but this is not a great football team. Kansas City is, they just didn't make mistakes, and they allowed Baltimore to make mistakes to give them the game. This Kansas City team is not good. I just don't understand how they're here. I know I'm a hater, but good night. This is not a good Kansas City team, and it's driving me insane. I can't watch it anymore.
And I think they're going to walk away in 2 weeks with another ring. I truly do. I don't get the Ravens game plan. They had some turnovers. Only one was early. That was Jackson sack strip. And Jackson wasn't even terrible. The interception, he threw an interception into triple coverage, quadruple. There were a lot more Chiefs than there were Ravens. And that was him just, I don't want to say playing hero ball, but just playing, you know, out of his comfort zone. 20 of 37 for 272 yards, a touchdown. They were fitting a square peg in a round hole. And 100%. Kansas City's defense is pretty good, but they're not great.
Yeah.
And they're better rushing the passer with Chris Jones and Menichu. And, you know, so why are you playing into their hands?
It seemed like Baltimore wanted to almost prove a point in the way that they won. It's kind of like the way that I saw it. It was, why is Lamar Jackson throwing the ball 37 times from the pocket? I'm not blaming Lamar for having to throw the ball from the pocket. I think the Chiefs did a great job letting him do that, because that's what you want him to do. I blame the Ravens for, why are you doing this? Like, what is your thought process? I legitimately think that they wanted to win a certain way to be like, ha, see, we're this. Well, you're not. You're a run the ball, pound the rock, use Lamar Jackson's athleticism, throw the ball when you have to, and then you still use Lamar Jackson's athleticism. Everything they did was so ass backwards. It's just like really hard to comprehend. I still, you know, a week later, and I'm still trying to process it. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Chiefs went up 17-7, like 10 points right before halftime. So basically, the entire first half, it was a one possession game. But hell, not even that. I mean, it was a tie game going into the second quarter. But it's not like the Chiefs went up big and the Ravens had to battle back. It was, you know, a 10 point game. You can run the ball in the second half, and they just didn't. It was just really weird. I don't know.
Yeah, Patrick, second half, second quarter. You can run the ball in the second quarter. There's so much time left.
They weren't very efficient. I mean, they're 3-and-out, 6 plays on their first touchdown, 4 plays and a fumble, 5 and a punt, 3 and a punt, 3 plays and a punt, 7 plays of punt, fumble, interception, then field goal, you know, then they never got the ball back. So it's not like they were overly, it was weird. Who was effective, or who was efficient, was Patrick Mahomes. 30 of 39. I mean, that's 77%, something like that. Not a lot of yards. I mean, Ravens kept everything in front of them, 240 yards and one touchdown, but he threw it to Travis Kelce 11 times, 11 receptions for 116 yards and the touchdown. Like, that's, to be able to be that, you know, every time, like when do you start doubling the guy? Like, that's the Hall of Fame player on that, you know, the other Hall of Fame player on that team, and you don't double him.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me. Again, everything the Ravens did, I thought was just ass backwards. Like, you know, the first thing you do is you stop Kelce, and you make him find Rashee Rice or one of the other receivers. They did it the opposite. They just said, you can do whatever you want with Kelce. It was mind-boggling. I mean, you really can't. The Ravens didn't play horribly on defense. They gave up 17 points. I thought Mahomes and the Chiefs won the game with their experience. And there was things that the Chiefs did to me that said they were scared of the Ravens and they were just trying to get out of there as quick as possible and couldn't believe that they were in the lead. You know, it would be 3rd and 8 and Mahomes would drop back knowing he's not going to get the first down. And they would just make sure they completed a 3-yard pass. That way, it's another 40 seconds off the clock. And I will give the Chiefs credit. I thought they played a really – Mahomes was a perfect game manager on Sunday. And, I mean, yeah. I truly believe that's what he was. He was a game manager. He didn't do anything to go win the football game. You know, the first drive was great. But after that, I mean, really, I thought the Chiefs as a whole just managed the game. They just tried not to lose it.
That's kind of how they've been for almost the past 2 months. I mean, they were playing well, then went into, you know, a little bit of a spin and, you know, then picked up winning again at the end of the season. But it's been, they haven't been explosive. Against the Bengals, they kicked so many, what was it, 6 field goals? They scored seven scoring drives, one touchdown, 6 field goals. Like, they're not explosive anymore, but they're doing just enough, and their defense is playing well. And it's, that's a formula that can win in a week and a half.
When you have a really good head coach in Andy Reid, and when you have a really good quarterback in Mahomes, I hate saying that, but yes, it's true. When you have a really good quarterback in Mahomes, that I think the one thing I will give credit Mahomes for is he's accepted what this team is, you know, what Kansas City is, which is not explosive. They're not dynamic. They're not highlight reel worthy. They're just going to go out and, you know, pick up some first downs here and there and kind of methodically move the ball. I give Mahomes credit. He's not trying to make the hero throws anymore, which he did that for a solid, you know, couple years thinking that he was Superman. And I think I'll give him credit. I think he's realized that he's not that and that this team is not that. And he's got to take the easy stuff. And that's really what this team is. It's just amazing to me. They're in the Super Bowl. I think it's just highly improbable because I do not think this is I think they're a slightly above average football team. I would not put Kansas City in the top 5 teams in the NFL right now. I really wouldn't.
The end of the year, they weren't playing like a top 5 team in the AFC.
Yeah. Agreed.
And like all year, I mean, the Bengals defense was terrible. And when Burrow went down, we're like, well, this wasn't their year anyway, because the defense was playing so poorly. They'd struggle in the playoffs. I really think if Burrow were healthy and they had finished, you know, if he'd finished the season out, Bengals would have been in the fucking Super Bowl again. Like, obviously there's a huge home, you know, huge homer, you know, pick saying that, but
yeah. Well, you look at the AFC. I mean, Buffalo got beat by Kansas City by 3. I mean, the Bengals have dominated Buffalo throughout. Yeah. Really the only holdup was, will you beat Baltimore? And, you know, Baltimore would have had to beat the Bengals for a 3rd time if they would have met, and you have a healthy Burrow. This really was a year where things could have lined up. It just, you know, it didn't work out, but, I don't think the AFC was as strong as we all maybe thought it was, at times during the season, being a conference that we thought maybe was 6 and 7 deep with the Jaguars and teams that really weren't even ever, you know, in it.
Jets on top of that.
Yeah. And then you look at the Browns, everybody was on the Browns bandwagon. You know, but we all knew Flacco would be Flacco.
Right. And even without all the quarterback injuries, I mean, yeah, injuries decimated the conference, but I mean, both conferences for that matter, but just weird, weird year. I'm ready for it to be over.
Yeah.
Want to talk about the free agency. I want to talk about the draft. We're not there yet. We still have the other, the NFC championship game. San Francisco holds on to beat Detroit 34-31. I feel I really feel for the Lions. Like, they're one of the two, maybe three franchises that the Bengals can dunk on mm-hmm. in the history. Mm-hmm. Them, the Browns, and the Cardinals. But they were up so big in the first half.
Yeah.
And wheels fell off in the second half. And I'm not good. Again, I said it before and I say it again. I hate the word choke. 49ers are a better team. 49ers played poorly in the first half and then came back and showed why they've been, you know, they've been Super Bowl title contenders for the past several years. Figured that it was going to be the Lions defense that was going to kind of hold them back. And it was. The 49ers scored on five straight second half drives until they kneeled it out to end the clock. Brandon Ayuk got a reception off the bounce off of the defender's face mask. Just
crazy.
Yeah, I mean that's the crap that happened to the Bengals. That's Brandon Stokley catching a touchdown, you know, 87 yards, however the hell long it was.
Running across the goal line. Yeah, I remember that.
Running out the time, yeah. Season opener a couple years ago. And it's just, you want to say they'll be back, but it's not easy to get back.
No, you can't say that. I mean, you know, the Eagles, you know, people would say, well, they'll be back. They got everybody, this defense, they're, you know, the offensive line, the quarterback, they've got young receivers, they're explosive. And the Eagles were 10-1. I mean, at that point, you're saying, oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah. They'll be back. Well, now, you know, at the end of the season, after a 10-1 start, there was talk about firing the head coach. So, I mean, things change in the NFL quickly, you know, and NFL teams don't take long to learn. So whatever the Lions did this year, and I love their offense. I love some of the things they do. I love Dan Campbell, minus some of his insane decisions. But, you know, things change quickly and people study you tremendously. Yeah. So, you know, you can't come back in 2024 and do the same thing you did in 2023. You will get blasted. It just won't work. You always have to be moving and growing in the NFL. Otherwise, people are going to pass you up.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest enemy for a successful team is complacency.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I mean, to be able to do what Kansas City is doing right now or what New England did, I mean, that's incredibly rare. I mean, that's literally the only two teams that have, you know, been able to sustain that in the past 30 some odd years. Yeah. I want to see the Lions. I'd love to see them win it all because I don't care for any of the team in the division. They'll piss off Packers. It'll piss off the Bears. But yeah, I mean, it's no guarantee. Like, yeah, they're relatively young, but who's putting a ton of money on Jared Goff continuing to play this way? He was absolutely disposable a few years ago.
Yeah. And
he's played well, but
yeah. And are you willing to, for next year, are you willing to take the Lions hands down, no matter what, over the Packers? I don't know about that. I mean, Packers young, they look good. Yeah. They were ascending as the season ended. So,
well, whose organization do you trust more?
Right.
No, yeah, not even counting the 53 guys in uniform and the coaches.
Right. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Packers. Yeah, they've only won two rings in the last 50 some odd years, but pretty much since Brett Favre, you know, in early 90s, they're there every single year. They're in the playoffs.
Well,
injury and, you know.
The Packers' two rings matches the Detroit Lions' two playoff wins in the last 30-something years. So
Exactly. Exactly. So Super Bowl 54 or 58. Wow, 58.
That's too big. These numbers are getting too big.
They need to quit putting the Roman numerals up. Just put the numbers down. I even put in the notes. Actually, I didn't put it in the notes. I put rematch of Super Bowl 54. That's why I said 54. Okay.
So when I was a kid, this is hilarious. When I was a kid, I had a buddy who was playing Madden. Okay. This buddy is not smart. All right. So he goes, man, I'm playing Madden. He goes, this year's Madden game is stupid. I said, why? He goes, well, they keep calling the Super Bowl extra large. I mean, it's just dumb. I go, buddy, that means 40. That means Super Bowl 40. He goes, what do you mean? I said, it's Roman numerals. Anyways, he was dead serious. He thought Madden was dumb because it was Super Bowl extra large. So thought I'd throw that in there for you.
Yeah, but Super Bowl extra large was the Steelers after they blew out Kimo von Ohlhoff and blew up Carson Palmer's knee.
Yeah, it would have been 18 years ago, I guess. Yeah, right?
Why, Greg? Why'd you got to bring that
up? Well, I didn't bring up that part. I was just bringing up, I thought my buddy was a moron. I thought that was worthy of, you know, a little bit of airtime.
It is, but the association, man. No. Out of the four possibilities going into last weekend, I think this is the least appealing matchup to me. I don't care. Like the Niners, fine. Like they're a good team. Like they're kind of fun to watch, and they've got players all over defense. They're not interesting. And the Chiefs, I'm just tired of seeing them. So, what's your thought on it?
I don't think there was a game that was going to be played where I was going to be real happy because I didn't know what I wanted. Because if Detroit gets to the Super Bowl playing Baltimore, I thought Baltimore would definitely handle them. If Detroit gets to the Super Bowl playing Kansas City, I don't feel great about Detroit winning. And I don't want Kansas City or Baltimore to win. That was really the only thing I cared about. You won't find me rooting for San Francisco very often, but you will in a couple weeks because I cannot do it. I cannot watch Mahomes win. I'm not watching. Nothing against Taylor Swift. I don't want to watch Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. I'm done watching the Chiefs, you know, whatever you want to call it, the saga that is the Chiefs. I can't do it. I need help. Like, if there's one thing in life that must go right, the Niners must win this game. I cannot watch this. I can't do it. I can't.
I'm kind of the same way. Even though the Niners beat the Bengals twice in Super Bowls, I've never really minded them. Like, their players have always been like, well, Jerry Rice, the best damn receiver ever, or at least of his generation. You can't really compare across generations anymore. But Joe Montana just, I mean, he was what Joe Burrow is. Bill Walsh, the Bengals fucked up big time not hiring him and letting him leave. But like that, don't hold that against, you know, that's, don't hold that against them. So
I love Steve Young. He was awesome.
Yeah. Left-hander. I was a big fan. One of my lefty quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess I want them to win. Also, anything to just to try to knock Steelers and the Patriots, you know, knock them back on the all-time rings leaderboard, I'm good for. So,
yeah, I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, we'll go into it a little more next week as we're heading into the game. But yeah, let's just get these next week and a half over with and eat a shitload of greasy, crappy food and get drunk and try to forget the game.
Yes.
So, quick news and notes on the Bengals side. Still waiting for a quarterback coach hire. I think everything's just waiting to play out to see how all the coaches, you know, there's still a head coach opening. Then you have the offensive coordinator jobs and everything else. So they're probably waiting for that to happen before. But we're assuming it's going to be Brad Kragthorpe that's going to be promoted, and then someone's going to be hired to take his job as the assistant quarterback coach. Kragthorpe is a good fit. He worked with Burrow at LSU. So I think it was graduate assistant, or I forget what exactly he, or just some assistant there at, you know, in charge of quarterbacks. So, like I said, we're down to one NFL head coaching hire. We'll just run through them real quickly here. Carolina fired Frank Reich, hired Dave Canales. Any thoughts on him?
Good luck to anybody going to Carolina right now. I mean, it's not the same as Houston where you have that young quarterback and they had some pieces. I think Carolina's got a lot of work to do. I don't know that that's a job I would want to take because you know how the NFL works. And to me, that's a 3-year max job. I just don't see how you're successful.
That's job security for how Carolina's been rolling lately.
Yeah, true.
I mean, there's always a handful of coaching candidates that I'm interested in that I like, you know, that I want to see get jobs. And I didn't want any of them to get a job in Charlotte because of just that absolute shit show. Yeah, no. You do. I mean, I think Bryce Young is better than he played. Obviously they would have gone the other route and got CJ Stroud, you know, if they could do it all over. But I still think Bryce Young's still, you know, he's going to be a good quarterback, but there's a lot that needs to be built around him. They need receivers. They don't have a lot of depth anywhere.
I think this is one of those arguments you could make. Let's put Bryce Young in CJ Stroud's spot. Let's put CJ Stroud in Bryce Young's spot. And then let's check the numbers because I think Bryce Young has a better season if he's in Houston, and CJ Stroud has a worse season if he's in Carolina, because it matters where you get drafted and who's around you, especially as a rookie quarterback. And Carolina doesn't have anything to help a rookie quarterback right now. This year was a train wreck for them trying to help a rookie quarterback.
Yeah. And they've traded their number one, or they traded their first pick to trade up to that one spot, so they're not going to be able to pick, you know. Yeah, I mean, and so they're not going to be able to pick a franchise cornerstone player again this year that, you know, that you would assume they would after having such another disastrous season. So Las Vegas canned Josh McDaniels in season. Antonio Pierce was the interim coach, and they did the really, really smart thing and kept him around. I like Antonio Pierce.
I do too.
He was a damn good player, and team played well under him. Now, that doesn't always translate. It's kind of a dead cat bounce when you get rid of a coach. Mm-hmm. But I think it was a smart move. It's you do have talent there. Mm-hmm. So trying to navigate what's overall a pretty shitty division outside of Kansas City.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think they're a quarterback away from competing, you know. I mean, I think if you give them a good quarterback, I think they have a shot.
Not a Jimmy G believer or Aiden. O'Connell. Yeah, I was gonna say O'Connor or O'Day. I couldn't remember.
I think O'Connell has a chance to progress into something, you know, decent, but not to win right now. I don't like either one.
I feel so bad for Davante Adams.
Yeah,
that guy's good. He gets traded to an absolute, you know. I mean, Vegas is pretty much a train wreck. Yeah, they're in the playoffs a couple years ago, but they're always in flux. Like, there's not a lot of consistency with that team. They don't know what they want to be. They keep bringing in half measure, you know, quarterbacks, and Derek Carr is fine, but he's Andy Dalton. Like, if you're not going to surround him with, like, as good playmakers as you can around him, then you're just wasting time. You're going to have eight seasons and not really go anywhere.
Well, and you're so right about Davante Adams. I mean, because it gets worse for him. I mean, it's not just that he's in a living hellhole with what the Raiders have done with him. But then, you know, sometimes the grass is not greener on the other side. You look back where you came from, and all of a sudden, yeah, Jordan Love looks pretty solid, you know. Yeah. And that receiving core, I mean, if you add Davante Adams to that receiving room, is that not – I mean, that receiving room becomes – maybe more explosive than any receiving room in the NFL, or at least has the potential to be with all those young guys. I mean, they're loaded with good, talented receivers. So not only did he leave a place that now looks amazing, he went to a place that now looks atrocious, and he left to join his college quarterback in Carr. Well, he's gone. I mean, just, you couldn't draw it up worse.
Yeah. I mean, he's got, 25 million?
Yeah, I'm sure he'll
be able to make him feel a little bit better. So,
well, he's living in Vegas. That might be down to 12.
That's not a cheap city. Staying in the division, Chargers fired Brandon Staley, brought in Jim Harbaugh. This was, I don't know, say it's the great hire or bad hire. I don't really know. We'll find out. But this was the no-brainer, perfect fit. I mean, he played there and coached on the West Coast before. So, and there's a lot of shit coming down the pipeline against Michigan. That he's leaving, that he's kind of leaving behind.
Yeah, I think that's a terrific hire. The only problem that I see with it is the Chargers are projected to be $25 million over the cap, so they're going to have to do some moving around. Not that that's impossible. They're going to have to do some things, but it's going to be not as easy to add as you would like. But I do think that Harbaugh. I think the best part about this hire for them is Harbaugh's not going to let Herbert drop back and throw the ball 50 times. Harbaugh's going to make him run an offense. He's going to give Herbert easy throws. I think this is going to make Herbert overall a better quarterback.
Yeah, and I think we're past the days of thinking that Herbert belongs in the top tier, you know, with Burrow, Allen, and Mahomes, but he's still an incredibly talented quarterback that it's not like he's out there laying eggs. I mean, it's just not a great situation to him, and hopefully Harbaugh, you know, I mean, he was a good coach in when he was with San Francisco. So, I mean, hopefully he can kind of right the ship and just steady things for him and just build around him to build to his strength. So, and you don't want any quarterback to throw 50 times a game. His arm's going to fall off.
I think he turned J.J. McCarthy into the Brock Purdy-ish kind of thing of Michigan. Yeah. I think he can do something similar with Herbert, who I think has more explosiveness that he can do some things. So I think this will be a really good thing for Herbert because they're not going to let him just wing it around, which is – You gotta rein that guy in a little bit, and I think Harbaugh will definitely do that.
They need to get younger. They've got a lot. Yeah. Like, their receivers are old. Yeah, they brought in Quentin Johnson, who was really really disappointing. But I mean, I don't want to say they need to turn it all over, because I mean, you still have Khalil Mack, you still, you know, Bosa. I mean, you've got some dudes, but Keenan Allen and Mike Williams aren't young.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, what's going on with Eckler. Wow, yeah. Totally spaced on it. Like I was kind of surprised he was around this entire year this year. Are they going to bring him back? Are they going to, you know, get a new situation? But that's for them to figure out, not us. Atlanta fired Arthur Smith, brought in Raheem Morris. I like Raheem Morris. I think he's a good coach. Again, we were talking about this off air. They need a quarterback. As much as I love my boy Des Ritter, he's not doing it. Again, they've got talent on both sides of the ball. They've got a good running back. They've got good receivers. Maybe somebody can figure out what to do with, you know, the most talented tight end coming out of the draft in past 20 years before Brock Bowers comes out this spring. So figure out quarterback situation, and that's playoff team. I mean, that's still an ass division that's easily winnable.
Yeah, 100%.
And he knows the division. I mean, he was in Tampa Bay, so.
Yep.
By the way, I still hate that it's called Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is a body of water. The city is Tampa. The stadium is not floating in the Gulf of Mexico or in the bay. Like, Green Bay, The city's called Green Bay. That's why it's Green Bay. But Tampa Bay, that's a body of water. You're not playing for the body of water.
That's a great idea. They should put it in the water. That would be, like, such a destination game. That'd be badass. Cool. Yeah, put the stadium in the water. That'd be sick.
Yeah, I mean, figure out parking around that. But, I mean, imagine, I mean, Tampa's known for their, shall we say, gentlemen's clubs. And I'm sure there'd be a lot of them that would be popping up, like having, like, gentlemen's club yachts that would be around. So that's
for sure.
Just figured out their next stadium.
$1 billion in revenue right there.
Absolutely. We need to find someone to sell it to. The Glazers have a ton of money. I mean, they own...
You said gentlemen's club, Robert Kraft, maybe head on down to Tampa and get... I don't know. You know, I'm just throwing some things out there.
Cross-promotion with the Glazers down there in Tampa, so...
Oh, poor Kraft.
Poor Kraft, yeah. Poor billionaire who's heir to the Kraft Foods and...
bought his way out of all the trouble that he could be in.
Exactly. Commanders, they still don't have a coach. Ron Rivera was let go. I like Ron Rivera. I don't know what's going to happen to him. I think he needs to be on someone's staff. If not this year, maybe take a year off. But 2025, he's an absolute asset. I thought they were a great landing spot for Mike McDonald. You steal him away from the team across the Beltway, and they've got a couple. Like Baltimore has a couple free agents on the defensive side that would look really good going across the way. Actually, they'd look really good in stripes too. We'll talk about that down the road here too. But not sure where they're going to go, so we'll see. Titans fired Mike Vrabel, which is I think the dumbest move, but
horrendous.
But I like Brian Callahan. I think he's going to be a good coach. I'm worried that the bottom may fall out there. Now, they've got talent. I like Will Levis. I think he's got ability. He's not top tier, but I think he's, you know, at least be a good, solid quarterback that can, you know, lead a team to the playoffs. There's not a ton of playmakers on that team they need to figure out. Now, I do like Spears. I mean, Derrick Henry's going to be gone, but Ty J. Spears, like, I love that dude. I know we talked about him when we were talking mock drafts last year. I mean, I saw him carve up my Bearcats. Just fantastic runner, but you need more than that. They've got some pieces on defense. I worry they're going to bottom out a little bit here, and they weren't great this past year. So,
well, I think this is the definition of the front office having to place blame somewhere, and Vrabel gets fired. I mean, just look at what they did to Vrabel. You had to be the fighting Tannehills for 5 years. No. I mean, and so you stick him with Tannehill and you expect him to do more than what he did. Right. You have an aging Derrick Henry that you never traded away. You never acquired assets. You traded AJ Brown, the one guy who wasn't, you know, aging. He was still explosive.
Yeah.
And in return, you said, don't worry, we'll draft you a first round wide receiver, and you draft Treylon Burks. Yeah. I mean, well, he sucks. Yeah. So
brought in Julio Jones, who's 187 years old.
Right. I mean, Tennessee did nothing to help Mike Vrabel. And every single year, Tennessee had a chance to be in the playoffs, essentially, or was.
Yeah.
And you fire Vrabel. I thought that was just ludicrous. And I'm amazed by that move because I love everything about Vrabel.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised that he didn't get a head coaching gig. Maybe he's going to end up in Washington. We'll see. But Maybe you just want to take the time off.
Yeah,
well, that's smart. I mean, you get a little better choice, you know.
It was amazing to me, and I know the Patriots already had this set up with Mayo, but what a transition that would have been. You go from Belichick straight to Vrabel, and now you have Vrabel for the next 30 years. I mean, they could have done the most insane thing by hiring Vrabel, and I thought it would have been fantastic. But not saying Mayo won't be good. I don't know enough, but I thought that would have been just the smoothest transition in the history of sports.
I think they lost the chance when Bill just kept hanging on and on. I think the time to bring him on was when he got hired by the Titans. Like that, you know, I mean, they still had Brady and they're still winning, but Belichick's in his 70s now. I mean, late 60s, that's a good time to just go up to the front office. We'll go into that. I mean, Patriots, I mean, Bill Belichick got let go and Gerard Mayo. Again, that's a good hire. It's someone who's been in the system. Now they need a lot of help. Like that offense is bad. They have they have several quarterbacks, but none of them are any good. Just not enough talented playmakers. Running back, I mean, Stevenson's fine.
I like Stevenson, but they need a lot.
Yeah, defense is kind of bottoming out, and they've got a high draft pick, so they got a chance to get an impact player, but you got to develop that now. So with a rookie head coach, and that's probably the best, is having that rookie head coach coming in with the quarterback. I mean, look what happened to the Texans, and we thought Texans were still going to go 2-15 this year. We see what happened to them. So it does turn around fast.
Yeah, I do think the NFL's in an era where you can flip it on a switch pretty quick. I mean, especially if you have that high draft pick, you can get a quarterback. We all know you can get running back in almost any round. So you can use a late. Yeah, if you pick up a running back that's good late, now all of a sudden you're looking at, you have quarterback, you have running back, and you just have to add a couple pieces, and all of a sudden you have an explosive offense. So I do think you can rebuild pretty quickly.
Yeah. Except not in Carolina.
No, they're way too many pieces away. I mean, they have guys that are just in the way, clogging up spots that you've already paid money to. So they're in real trouble.
Telling you, Von Bell is going to be a cap casualty, and he's going to end up signing back here.
I would love that.
He and Jordan Battle are going to be, are going to be starting safeties, and Dax is going to be a third safety, going to be slot corner. Like, he's going to be some weird hybrid. Use his ability to let better think. That's, fingers crossed, that's my...
I would love that.
Yeah. Last one, Seahawks going from the oldest head coach in the league to the youngest, Pete Carroll out, Mike McDonald in, fantastic hire. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm glad he's out of the division. I'm glad he's out of the conference. He just... Burrow sees everything, understands everything, and McDonald was able to mess with his timing, mess with his internal clock, all the simulated pressures and everything, and look like he's going to bring the house and brings three. Looks like he's going to bring three and brings the house, and just that's a really slam dunk hire there. I think that's probably my favorite hire for such, coach and situation of any of the seven that have been hired already so far.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think, like, you hit the nail on the head. I think that's a home run hire for them.
Yeah. So, again, light news week this week. Again, going to the Super Bowl, not a whole hell of a lot going on. You got the shenanigans next week with the media day and all that stupidity that entails. I hate all that shit. I hate the Super Bowl halftime show. I don't care. It could be, like, I could be in charge of picking the bands, and every band that I pick could be playing, and I still hate the damn thing.
Yeah, I don't.
In and out. Let's get back on the field. You want a concert, do it before the game, do it after the game.
I would rather watch the media day than watch the Pro Bowl.
I'd rather watch the media day and the Pro Bowl than the actual game this year, but you don't want to watch flag football?
No.
That was actually kind of fun last year. I watched a little bit of it. I didn't realize that it was a two-day thing.
Yeah.
But
no, I think they're getting better, make it interesting, like trying to make it interesting. But, I only have basically one football game left for months.
Yeah.
And then you're going to throw this in my, this flag football is not going to help me. This is not going to hold over that I get no football for 6 months.
You're not going to watch UFL or whatever the hell the combined league is?
I'm sure I'll catch a game, maybe.
I guess CFL starts before NFL. You get to watch our Canadian brethren. I still don't fully understand all the rules for the game. It's weird. I like it. I like it's more spread out.
Yeah.
But some of the rules are weird.
I saw something the other day. They threw a ball to a guy behind the line of scrimmage, but then he can punt onside kick to himself, and it's a first down. I mean, I still don't understand if I understood what was happening.
There's another scoring method, and I can't think of like what exactly it's called, but you score like 2 points or 3 points or something on some, like, I don't watch enough of it, and I probably should, just because former UC quarterback Zach Lawrence, his past decade, he's been one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but it's weird, man. Canadians are weird, but their food is really good. Really damn good. I love poutine.
Poutine. Well,
that's some good shit. So, topic of this week, we're just ranking the Bengals starters. 25 starters. You've got 11 on offense, 11 on defense, and the three specialists. We only have 21 to rank because they need a wide receiver too. T. Higgins might be back, might not be back, probably back. We don't know. Don't know who the slot receiver is. Don't have a right tackle. Don't have a nose tackle. So, number one spot, that's pretty easy, right?
Yeah. Joey B. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Burrow. Jamar Chase isn't really too far behind, but Burrow's the second best quarterback in the NFL, and Chase is one of the five best wide receivers in the NFL. So, but again, so that makes number two nice and easy. Jamar Chase. It's going to look a lot different next year, even if T's back, because you're going to have a different receiver in the slot. I think they need to lean on ways to get Chase the ball. And we talked about this, just being creative, like use your playmakers more instead of trying to like feed everybody. And you neglect the tight end last year. I would assume that they're going to address tight end in the offseason, but they didn't last year, and they knew they knew they had nobody coming back. So Who's to say they're going to do anything? So feed your playmakers, like, force feed them the ball, be creative, like handoffs, reverses, jet motion, just anything to get them the ball 10, 50 times. Again, I would love to see them use Chase the way that San Francisco uses Debo. And I think he's got that ability. I really do.
Yeah, I agree.
He's built like a running back. Like, he is, like, his lower body is so strong.
Yeah.
And yeah, you don't want to overexpose your wide receiver where he's going to get, you know, knee blown out or something like that, or broken ankle being caught up in the bottom of a pile. But like, that stuff's going to happen. Like, injuries happen.
And you're not talking about, you know, using him that way 25 snaps a game. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a handful of plays a game, 6 to 7 reps a game, where he's doing something outside of, I don't want to say his comfort zone, but outside of what is his normal, you know, responsibilities right now, where you can get him extra touches for free, basically.
Exactly. So, number three, and again, these first couple ones are pretty much chalk and pretty easy to go here, but Trey Hendrickson, I don't think any objections there. I mean, the guy's just the beast, just set the Bengals record for sacks in the season. Could have, if he wanted to, could have tried chasing down the NFL lead, but decided just to sit out. I mean, he played barely into the second quarter the last week and sat out the rest of the game. So, I don't know.
That's why
I would have been pressed to, like, fuck TJ Watt. I'm coming for the 19 sacks.
That's why I love Trey Hendrickson, because I don't think he cares at all. I don't. He is who he is. I mean, he's just, that's why he's Trey Hendrickson. That's why he's good, because he's just not, none of that stuff matters to him.
Yeah. So, I've got I don't say controversial, maybe a surprising pick at number four. Who would you put number four?
No, I mean, I don't really have a problem with this. I was high on him before the draft. I would probably go T at four, just for the longevity.
Yeah,
just because he's done it longer, and sophomore slump is a, you know, can be a real thing. So, but I don't hate the pick that you have here.
It's Jordan Battle that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Again, he was the highest graded Bengal defender, highest graded rookie defender. Absolutely just filled in the huge hole that Nick Scott left.
That he left by being there.
Right. He left by just his presence being in the locker room. I'm sure Nick Scott is a really nice guy. No reason to think otherwise, but he was not. PFF had 95 safeties that reached their threshold. He was 95 out of 95. That's not good.
That was one of the shockers of the season. I thought he would be somewhat of a piece. I'm not saying I thought he'd be an all pro, but I thought he'd be able to make some plays.
Man, it was exacerbated by Dax Hill having a disappointing season. So, but yeah, Jordan Battle, I think he's the only has up to go from there too. So it's would have loved to have him play next to Jesse Bates instead of kind of as a replacement, but
yeah, definitely would have helped.
Yeah, he solidified himself as a stud. So number five, I have Cam Taylor-Britt. This is where I would have put T. And the only reason that I have T like down a little bit is what's the best ability?
Availability.
Exactly. And he's missed almost 30 games. And that's if the Bengals, like, I understand the Bengals balking on paying him for a long-term contract because he's, you know, that's five games a year that he's out, unfortunately. And that's, like, you're putting a lot of eggs in the basket. And it's one thing if it's someone who's making Tyler Boyd money or, you know, like an average, you know, a decent receiver. But he's going to get paid top of the chart, you know, top of the scale, like top 10 receiver money. And, like, that's space that, and unfortunately, like that money's gone. I mean, that's, you pay him $20 million a year, and you're only getting $13 million in value because he's missing he's missing all that time. So, with T not being there, we're not counting T. I've got Cam Taylor-Britt. Had a good year, kind of up and down, but I really think that he's just going to continue to ascend. He's got all the physical skills. He's fast. He's very, very physical. And he's that guy that gets under your number one receiver's skin. And those are the guys you absolutely hate if you're going up against them.
I think he's a budding superstar. I really do. I think I think he has the ability to become a top five corner in the NFL. I really do. I think he's that talented.
Yeah. Good dude on top of that is does a lot of charity work and just a fun, entertaining guy too. So again, we got him number five. Six and seven kind of go hand in hand. They both were disappointing, but I still think this is where they slot. I've got Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt. I'm willing to give... I think Logan is clearly the better player, at least the more consistent player. I'm willing to give them both a little bit of a pass just because of the defense around just kind of fell apart, and I don't know if they were trying to do too much, but they missed more tackles than they should have. Both weren't great in coverage, but how much of that is, you know, linebackers sit in zone a lot, and how much of that is not having a safety behind you that you can trust, and you're carrying the guy too far down, you know, too far down the field, or not far enough because you're used to safety picking them up. And I'm willing to give them both a bit of a pass. I still think they're both really good players, despite how this year is. What are your thoughts on the linebackers?
I completely agree. I think this is the spot you'll see. I don't want to say you'll see improvement from Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt, like they're getting better, but right. When everybody else gets better around them, their job will get easier, which will allow them to look better. Even though I don't think they're necessarily better players and they've figured something out, they're just going to look better because things around them will make that much easier.
Yeah. The play will be better. So,
yeah.
Behind them, 8 and 9, I've got two guys. And again, we'll just kind of lump them together real quickly here. Ted Karras and Alex Kappa, they're kind of the stalwarts on the offensive line. They're both solid. Neither one of them is great, but they're both middle of the pack, you know, maybe slightly, maybe a step above middle of the pack, but guys you can rely on, high floor type guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Warriors, now they're both kind of, you know, starting to age up there, so you need to make sure you've got some kind of succession plan, but... What are your thoughts on the
record? I like 8 and 9 because you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
It's going to McDonald's breakfast through the draft. You know what you're going to get. It's very simply put, you know what you're going to get. You know what to expect. And it's good enough to win. So I'm with those two picks.
Sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin with a hash brown and an orange juice.
There you go.
I'm hungry now. I think I want to get that. We've got to figure out dinner. So. Along the lines of just reliability, knowing what you're going to get. Number 10, Mike Hilton, absolute dog. Early part of the season, he did not look good. He looked like he struggled at the end of 22 season, especially in the playoffs. And he started out the season kind of looking the same way, like maybe he was starting to age. But end of the year, he looked like the absolute Mike Hilton dog that we're used to. Flying in off the edge on run blitzes, flying in, taking down quarterbacks, and just... made a few more plays in coverage than I expected for someone his size, pass breakups. I mean, this guy's 5'9". I mean, average receiver's, you know, 6'1". He's giving up 4 inches, and he's still making plays on the ball. But just one of those guys you can't help but absolutely just love just for his energy and his attitude.
Yep, completely agree. And I think you know, the thing that Bengals fans probably won't think about as much is, you know, you think about what the Bengals did the last couple of years, and for Mike Hilton to come out and kind of start slow for these guys that, not that I want to call Mike Hilton old because he's a young man, but
yeah,
old in football years or older, getting older. You know, when you play 17 games and now all of a sudden you add another four in the playoffs, I mean, this year the Bengals are going to get a month off they haven't before. I think some of these guys are going to, their bodies are really going to appreciate that month off, and you're going to see some different players next year. That time matters. Super Bowl hangover is real for a reason.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, especially or in 2021, Bengals played 21 games. No one had ever played 21 games in a season. I'm still not a fan of the expanded season. I think it's just a dumb money grab, but that's another story for another time and place. And especially, yeah, for rookies, that season ends up just so much longer than what they're used to in college. And then you've got guys that are, you know, your established veterans that, yeah, like they're not, like they're just wearing down. And you saw with Trey Hendrickson, you saw that with Sam Hubbard and some of the other guys, like they get worn down because they play so many snaps. So, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you go playoffs and preseason, just games. I mean, when you're playing 24 games, that's literally half the year. You're playing a game of football, which is like getting hit by a Mack truck when you're in the NFL, something I would know nothing about. But I mean, that's half the year. You're just slamming heads together. So a month off
is the hard part is the practice. Like you've got 4 days of practice running up against each other. Like that's the, like the games are the, like the less, the less stressful on your body than the practice.
And we have an
cumulative effect.
And we haven't even added in training camp and there's a lot to it. I'm just saying this month off is going to help a lot of these Bengals.
I hope so. Number 11, odd, kind of an odd pick, but I think it fits. Cal Adomaitis. He's just kind of stepped into absolutely spacing. Who was the long snapper?
Clark Harris. Yeah, he comes into the, I was going to say, he comes into the shop here every once in a while. So
yeah, totally spaced on him. But, I mean, just reliable, no unplayable snaps, and that's what you want. Like, that's, you know.
No news is good news when you're talking about, you know, the snappers.
Yeah, you don't want to hear their name called at all, so.
Yeah.
Number 12 is kind of controversial. I'm not going to say controversial, but kind of a surprise that he's technically kind of in the back half now. Orlando Brown Jr., he's a good left tackle. He's not great. He's, for what he's being paid a year, he's about what you're going to expect. He's going to struggle against speed guys. He's so big and bulky, like speed guys and guys that have quick moves, like Myles Garrett, just going to absolutely eat him for lunch. And that's, you know, that's what's going to happen. That's what happens. But he's a absolute road grader in the run game, and can stone most edge rushers.
I don't have a problem with this pick at all. I think there's even potential for him to be a little higher, because when you're talking about, if you're going to name two positions that matter in the NFL for you to win, you start at quarterback and then you probably go directly to left tackle. Yeah. And so he plays a position where, you know, you have to have it, and it can go downhill very quickly because you're always one-on-one. You know, there's not going to be, you ain't going to get help. You ain't going to get, you're not going to have buddies that are going to help you out. If you play poorly, your team will lose. That's just a fact. And you talk about guys like Myles Garrett and Watt and all these. Well, you know, they beat up a lot of people. So Orlando Brown, to me, I think is a little bit sometimes maybe undervalued, because the if you don't do a great job as the president, it's still that's not an easy job. You know what I mean? So
right.
there's a lot of things about being the left tackle that he does do enough that he probably gets undervalued. I think just a touch, not a ton, but at times.
Yeah. And he's fine. If you have a fine left tackle, like you're solid.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't want someone who absolutely sucks ass. Number 13, Evan McPherson. And he probably deserves to be a little bit higher, but he's still a kicker. Made every kick inside 50 yards this year. I'm gonna say less reliable, over 50, but kind of expect in a normal year he'd probably hit a few more. you know, I'd have that percentage a little bit higher above 50. But again, like, this, you don't have to worry about a competition. He's a damn good kicker. Like, he's, you don't have to worry about him giving up returns on kickoffs because he's kicking out of the end zone every time. So not a whole lot that really needs to be.
And I kind of blame the Bengals for not letting McPherson be a weapon. If you're going to – every time he has a shot from 57 and in, I think they should let him kick it. I think he's that good. And I think the fact that he's sporadically kicking 50, let him kick one every game. I really don't care. If he misses, I don't think it's a bad decision. I think if you let him kick 12 50-yarders, he might miss three. Okay, big damn deal. I mean – I think we let him be a weapon like the Ravens have used Tucker for so many years.
Yeah. So, but again, like, again, to not have to worry about a kicker is nice. So,
oh, it's beautiful.
Behind him, BJ Hill and Sam Hubbard, I've got them at 14 and 15 respectively. They both kind of fit in similar boat to me. They're both good, solid players. They play too many snaps and they're paid a lot of money for people who are kind of average at what they do. And that's not a knock. Like, An average NFL player is a damn good and damn valuable player, but you look at where they are, like how much money they're making for what they do, and you would want them to be a little more impact players. Now, BJ Hill, like that guy makes some crazy plays, like the two interceptions that he had, the one that he had when Nick Mullins was falling down and threw it right at him, and he bobbled in as he's down on the ground. But again, these are good players making better than good money that. Honestly, I wonder if the Bengals might have some discussions about cap casualties with them this year. I don't think so, but I think that's a discussion that they're having.
I think I would be able to argue with you on BJ Hill. Sam Hubbard, I think I love Sam Hubbard. I think he's amazing as, you know, a guy and all that. But if we're talking strictly football, I think he probably should be a cap casualty. He doesn't provide much. I mean, he's more of like just going to be there and he's a middle of the road. There's no, you know, wins above replacement. They use that in baseball all the time. I think Sam Hubbard, if there was a wins above replacement in football, he would be a zero. He'd be dead. He'd be the absolute average NFL defensive end. That's just how I feel. So BJ Hill, I think I could argue with a little bit. He does make some big time plays. But Sam Hubbard, I feel like the only plays he makes are the ones that are in his lap, which is not, again, not saying he's a bad football player, but for what he's making, I don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, he has BJ Hill has the fourth. Sam Hubbard has the fifth highest cap hits going into next year. Now, I think BJ Hill is also saved more by the fact that there's less depth there at defensive tackle. Like, they don't have anyone else that can push the pocket. Sam Hubbard, like, again, PFF is do with it what you want, but in looking at the score, looking at the grades, and then looking at the games, I think Cam Sample can replace a lot of the snaps that the Sam Hubbard has. Neither one of them are great pass rushers, but Cam Sample played really well against the run, graded higher than Sam Hubbard against the run this year.
Yeah.
And he's still on a rookie deal for that matter. So.
I hate to say this, but if Sam Hubbard wasn't from Cincinnati and then you have the 99-yard, you know, fumble return, which was the greatest play ever, I don't really think this is a question. I think it's pretty much a done deal.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to cut him going, like, they'd have a cap savings of $6 million for next for 2024 if they were to cut him before, actually, at any point. Yeah, and if they release or trade him post June 1, they'd have $2 million dead cap this year, $2 million next year, and you'd save $8 million. So it's – we here in Cincinnati love our hometown boys and hold them in way higher regard than we probably should. I like Sam. Absolute, like, awesome motor, but you're not getting anything irreplaceable, so – next guy on the list, number 16, Cordell Volson, and he's a guy who I could make an argument. I put him above BJ Hill, finished the way that he finished the last month and a half this season. He looked like a long-term piece.
Yep.
Now, that's six games out of 34 games he's played in the NFL, but I don't know. I doubt they're going to bring in anyone to provide any reasonable competition against him. And if he can keep up the way that he played, then great, because he's the young guy on a rookie contract on a really, really expensive offensive line that isn't worth what they're paying. So,
yeah, he's a steal. I mean, if he can continue to ascend like he has, I mean, because that was he really did play well. And if he can do that, then the Bengals are winning on that scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. Next spot, I've got running back. I've got Joe Mixon and Chase Brown. Chase Brown is I think a perfectly passable piece. I think Joe Mixon still has tread on the tires. They need to change the mix. I think they need to get someone in a little younger to team with Chase Brown. And they're fine. Like, they're not bad, but you need better production, better productivity. This isn't a team that runs the ball a ton to begin with. And when you do run it, you need to be more explosive. And they showed that with Chase Brown, but then continue to give Mixon 80% of the carries. That's my biggest confusion and gripe on the season, more than tight end, more than like the defense, because I think, you know, we know why the defense struggled. The love affair with Joe Mixon being the exclusive running back, especially in this day and age when no one uses an exclusive running back, and his productivity has gone down. Make it make sense, Greg.
Preach, brother. I'm listening. I agree. I think you hit everything perfectly. I got nothing for you, man. I agree.
Well, you need to pat it out another few seconds because I'm about to take a sip here.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, Mixon he's getting old. Yeah. I totally agree with what you're saying. I think it's time for a change up. I think that, let's say there's 90 running backs in the NFL. I legitimately think you could take all 90 of them and they could all be 1,000-yard rushers for the Bengals in this offense. Yeah. In this offense, I think it would be quite difficult to not be a 1,000-yard rusher.
I would love for them to look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire, as a complimentary piece. He's not going to make a lot of money. He's coming off his rookie deal, and he was displaced, but he still has a lot of. And again, we're getting out of our lane here, talking about offseason free agency. But I would love to see him paired with Chase Brown. I think that makes a lot of sense. So
yeah,
18, kind of a similar thing. A tight end, Tanner Hudson, Drew Sample. Tanner Hudson's technically not a returning player because he's the exclusive rights free agent still, but he'll be back. He's a Bengal next year. And Drew Sample, I like Tanner Hudson. I like what he did. Bengals somehow got more productivity out of their tight ends this past year than they did in 2022 and 2021, which absolutely blows my mind. And they found something, especially using those guys, but they do need an infusion. They need a long-term guy. Quit going with these year by year by year. Irv Smith was only a one-year deal, which again, that still didn't make any... It still is weird that he was a one-year... Like, if you like the guy, fine, but you need someone to plug in multiple years. So draft somebody, sign somebody. I don't care, but you need someone else in there that's younger than, I mean, Hudson's going to be 30. Drew Sample is, Drew Sample's a free agent for that matter, but Drew Sample's going to be 27. 20, I don't know. He's late 20s too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'm starting to lean towards the fact, I don't know if the Bengals make a move for tight end. I think they might just roll on as long as they can bring Sample back, obviously, which I would assume that will happen. I think if they go Tanner Hudson, Drew Sample, I think they'll be fine rolling into the season like that. At least like for their mindset. I don't think tight end's going to be the thing, and I wouldn't draft it in this draft after you just passed up the greatest tight end draft in the history of the NFL. So
I think they'll have to draft somebody like late just for special teams and just for depth. I mean, obviously Irv Smith is gone. All their tight ends are technically free agents. I mean, Mitch Wilcox is a restricted free agent, so he's likely to be back, and like Hudson, but they don't have a tight end under contract, so it's like they'll have to bring somebody in, preferably somebody who at least has some athletic ability. So,
yep,
we shall see. Number 19. This would have been higher if we would have done this around week 11 or week 12. DJ Turner. I think future is still really bright for him, but he struggled down the stretch. I don't know if it was hitting a wall or teams found some tendencies on him, but he has a lot of the same traits that Cam Taylor-Britt has. Similar size, he's even faster. I mean, he ran the second fastest 40, I think, timed at the combine. So, in the second year player, he's a presumptive starter. at corner two, I guess, going into the year.
Yeah, I think, you know, you could argue that this guy could be higher if you were looking for this list, you know, moving forward. If this is a list of, you know, what's happened. But I DJ Turner, I feel very good about that draft pick. Again, we talked about playing rookies and how, you know, things just, when you're a rookie, you're learning things. Things go wrong. I think you'll see a huge jump for DJ Turner.
And it helps him. I mean, if he's going to be taking reps at first team cornerback in camp, going up against Jamar Chase, going up against presumably T. Higgins, like, you know,
you learn
as
quick.
Your first team reps. Yeah, you're going to have to, or you're going to be toast and someone else is going to be brought in to take your spot.
Yeah.
So last two picks, and these are the most disappointing for different reasons. 20 Dax Hill, all the physical ability. Again, his 2022 year was kind of a redshirt, didn't really get on the field much, and was kind of just played out of place. Came into the season, looked strong. I mean, he made a couple plays in preseason. He made a couple plays early in, like, the Cleveland game, beginning of the year. And then just absolutely just fell off the cliff, missing tackles, coverage errors, and just he looked like he wasn't ready to be an NFL safety.
I will go back to the same thing. I call this Dax rookie year. So, essentially, I still think there's a lot of positivity around Dax because I think he's gonna progress. I really see last year as his rookie year. I think he's gonna take another, not just a step. I see two or three or four steps, and he's another guy that I legitimately think can become a real playmaker for the Bengals.
Again, I think his long term role is gonna be some kind of a hybrid type player, and I don't, you know, Hilton is aging, and not, you know, he's still playing well, but, you know, he's starting to age out. Dax Hill has the size that he can cover tight ends better than, obviously a lot better than a 5'9" guy, but he's going to play better next year, but I can't really play worse unless he was Nick Scott. It was just disappointing. Again, we expected a lot out of this guy, and that was the, yeah, they're losing losing Bell and they're losing Jesse Bates, but they've got Dax Hill, you know, who's got all this ability and just laid an egg. So
he did.
Yeah. And last and certainly least, Brad Robbins, you don't ever want to be a punter at the bottom of the list. He's going to be around next year, but they're going to bring someone else in, whether it's a rookie, whether it's a veteran, there's going to be a competition. Just flaming hot ass.
Mm-hmm.
Rookie punters usually struggle. And he was awful the first handful of games. Middle of the season started to kick better, like getting more height on him. Like, he's not going to be Ryan Stonehouse, you know, it's kicking 54 or 55 yarders, kick after kick after kick. But you kick it 45 yards way in the air and guy fair catches it every time, and boom, that's 45 net. Like, that's fine. But right. Kicks got shorter and shorter, and just his, you know, he's supposed to be the directional guy, and he kept kicking punts into the end zone. I'm like, bring back Drew Chrisman. Good Lord.
Yeah. I mean, and I couldn't have been more wrong on this. I just kept preaching. I think, you know, things are going to, he's going to start to turn it around. And then he had that little glimpse where you thought, and then it came all crashing down. I'm still an idiot. I still have a little bit of hope that I think next year he comes out and he's just really good. You know, I was happy when they drafted this punter. I thought it was all good things. So I'm still holding out a little bit of hope, but let's see. Maybe I'll be happy if they bring in the punt god for a little competition.
Yeah, and it's you don't hope for someone to suck. You don't hope someone to lose their gig, but you need better than that. I did notice that University of Michigan Wolverines just came off a national title. I mean, they've been one of the better programs the last handful of years. The last three players that we have ranked, they're all Michigan Wolverines. DJ Turner, Dax Hill, Brad Robbins.
Wow. That is wild.
Not a personal slot or a slight in my on me. I hate Ohio State more than I dislike Michigan, so I didn't do that on purpose. But, yeah, that's... wasn't a great year for Michigan alums. Bengals have not had a ton of great play by Michigan alums throughout the career.
Who would
I'm trying
be
to think. Did Donnie Jones went to Michigan. He was good. But he was a solid player for a handful of years.
He had some decent years for the Bengals.
Chris Perry should have been great, but he had injury history. That's my guy. I was convinced he was going to be an absolute stud. They drafted him over Steven Jackson. I thought this guy is like got the guy that like, runs routes like a runs routes like a wide receiver. I watched camp one day. It was a season ticket thing, and he's out there running wheel routes and just grabbing the ball one-handed 30, 40 yards downfield. I'm like, this guy's got awesome change of pace. Like, this guy's a dude, and just wasn't there. Also, Chris Evans, another Michigan alum that just...
Yeah, that did work out.
They don't play well. Tony McGee, maybe, was he the best Michigan player for the Bengals?
Well, I think Chris Evans will be when they let him get in. He's gonna show us, Joe, as soon as he gets those reps.
Fingers crossed that one day he's going to get more than three snaps on offense. Going into year four, I don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think this is the day?
I don't think he's going to be a Bengal come training camp, come July. So
you wouldn't think.
So anyway, that's ranking our starters. Again, it's only 21 because they technically need four spots, and actually technically they need five. I totally forgot. All the tight ends are free agents going into this offseason, but we can safely assume that Hudson and Sample will be back. So. Although we safely assumed Von Bell was going to be back.
That's
and
true.
And Samaje Perine, so.
We missed that one.
Maybe we should stop making predictions.
Missed the boat.
Yeah, exactly. So, any final thoughts before we get out of here for the week, Greg?
Bring me some warmth.
Sunshine. Like, again, I'm here in my basement, and all the dampness in the air, and, again, it's obviously into the ground and everything. It's just so cold down here when it's sunny. Even if it's 5 degrees outside when the sun's out, it's warmer down here because it's not just, you know, maybe I need some dehumidifiers down here, but those are so noisy. And
yeah, those are annoying. I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, I mean, I've got one 5 feet away from me here, but if I had that on right now, I wouldn't even be able to record a show. It'd be too damn loud. So
yeah,
man, check out our shows on Riverfront. Red Lake Roundtable with Seth Shinner this week. Scott Hatteberg, played by the ever handsome Chris Pratt in Moneyball. I had him on this week. That was a great episode. Tomorrow in your guys' feed, you're going to have NBA Friday. You're going to have a Riverfront Red show. Ben and Tim always bring it on Late Night Reds. Check out Riverfront U for all of our college coverage. You guys know where to find us. Riverfront.com or RiverfrontCincy.com, YouTube.com, RiverfrontCincy. Check us out. Everyone, have a good week. We will see you guys next week. We'll be right back.